The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League, let's not build him up too quickly, but is Mason Greenwood the man to win the Euros for England in 2021? Two from him keeps Manchester United in touch with the chasing pack for the Champions League spots. In other centre-forward news, it's 101 for Jamie Vardy as Leicester get back on the horse. And in other centre-forward news, it's 1 for Che Adams. But what a strike as Southampton beat City. The crisis is over for Arsenal for a couple of days as they win at Wolves, while the bottom four consolidate their positions by all losing. In the Championship, there's manager sackings, hat-tricks, players eating pizza in the stands, and people jumping in canals for no reason. We'll round up all of that, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, good morning to you.
Good morning, Max. How are you?
I'm very good. The pubs have been open for 2 days. Have you been in one?
No, I haven't. I leave the pub going to the morons for a while until leave them to burn out, and then I'll go back when it's much more safe.
Are you saying that currently, in your position as a pub bore, it would be just too painful to witness so much bad pub etiquette from these people so desperate to get
in? I would dispute the notion that I'm a pub bore. I'm one of the great pub men, Max, as you well know. And yes, a lot of very small parts of me would die watching people who don't spend much time in pubs out in pubs. And to be honest, the main reason I haven't gone to the pub is that the only pub I'm interested in going to, while they're only sort of half open, is my local, which hasn't opened due to total and utterly commendable apathy on the part of the landlady, who just cannot be bothered making the necessary adjustments required for opening at this difficult time.
That sounds like exactly the pub I would imagine you go to. Jackie Oatley, nice to see you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well, and happy to have escaped the school run for one morning and maths homework, etc. So I feel like going to the pub right now as a result of all that.
Jackie, are you saying the only reason you're doing the pod is to get out of other more important responsibilities?
Yes. So when you texted me the other day and said, how do you fancy doing Monday morning 9 o'clock record? I was like, yes, please, where do I sign? Because that means my husband has to do all of the above, even though he has a work meeting too. So parents up and down the country will be very familiar with this particular struggle that we are all having. So to talk about football instead is an absolute pleasure and a joy.
John Bruin, welcome to the pod.
Hello, Max. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. I actually have been to a bar, and it was the bar of the British Film Institute? Maybe it's called something different these days.
What, by Waterloo?
Yes, that's right. And I went with my dad. We were the only people in there. But it felt a bit nervy, so I don't think I'm going to go back to a pub for a while. I don't know. You had to order via an app and,
right,
you know, a QR reader and all this type of thing. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Does Papa Bruin, is he, you know, I think if you thrust one of those square things in my dad's face, he would look very confused.
Well, yeah, we did spend about 10 minutes with him trying to work out what that was, but, you know, he's 74, come on.
That's fair enough. All right, let's start Old Trafford, shall we? Manchester United 5, Bournemouth 2. We've spoken to you a lot, John, over the years about Manchester United and in not always glowing terms about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but they're starting to play just really lovely football, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. If I was to talk about an era that this reminds me of Manchester United that's in my recollection, it's the 1980s. They're pretty dodgy at the back. They've got a couple of star midfielders, and then they've got loads of good players going forward. And they're entertaining to watch. And in Mason Greenwood, you've got a player there. I was trying to think of, okay, this is a very different season because of coronavirus and Project Restart, but in a different time, would we be comparing him to the height that players like Michael Owen or Wayne Rooney received at the time? Because he looks at that level at the moment, more a finisher, perhaps more of a Robbie Fowler or something like that than a Wayne Rooney. But what an exciting player he is. He's 18, which is very young. And I was reading that he spent his time during the break working on his upper body. And he's come back looking stronger, but the one thing that hasn't lessened is his finishing instinct. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knows what it is to be a finisher, and he said, hasn't he, that he's the best young striker that he's worked with.
Actually, Ravindra says, ask John Bruin how highly he rates Mason Greenwood compared to other Manchester United Academy players of the last 30 years, including the class of 92, Pogba, Ravel Morrison, Giuseppe Rossi, Adnan Januzaj.
Well, it's funny that he's mentioned two or three players that it didn't happen for. Giuseppe Rossi, Januzaj, all of those players made exciting starts, but it's almost as if over Greenwood has sustained it a little bit more. You know, if you're talking over the last 30 years, obviously the class of 92, I suppose which player made the biggest impact out of all of them? Greenwood has, in a sense. But then again, actually the one that I do recall, and it was actually at this game, Marcus Rashford, I think he scored a hat-trick on his debut, didn't he? And then two against Arsenal the next week, and, you know, there've been ups and downs, but he hasn't really looked back. And it's funny, isn't it? Marcus Rashford is, what, 22 now or something like that? And he's the senior partner with Mason Greenwood. The one thing you'd say about Manchester United is that throughout all the money that they've spent over the years and wasted, they still have the ability to turn out young players.
Jackie, I thought that second goal from Greenwood was so good because he picked the ball up in a position where there were lots of defenders in front of him. And I reckon if I was the opposing manager, I would say just get him on his right foot. And that would have been bad advice.
Very bad advice because he's completely two-footed. I mean, how many young talents in particular, but top players anyway, two-footed. Not so many, the likes of Ronaldo, maybe Zlatan, John Terry as a defender, perhaps less noticed, Farrah Williams in the women's game. Not so many are completely two-footed. But when you see this lad, and if you're as sad as me that when you're watching football, ideally by yourself, because my husband gets annoyed by these things, is I press record sometimes at a particular spot, say, for example, where he picked up the ball, to then show myself and do my own personal analysis of how much work he's still got to do. And when he took the ball wide and a little bit wider and then unleashed that right-footed shot into the top left-hand corner, you're just sitting there going, wow, because it wasn't as if he just ran onto it and hit it and hoped for the best. There's years and years of practice as well as natural talent that's gone onto it. And I don't know if you've seen the BT football clip, and you can hear the players shouting, don't let him turn. But it is so exciting to see a talent like that. When you look at the under-18s as well, the type of players they've got, and you look at Saka as well, who no doubt we want to talk about, it's exciting times for England.
The idea of you pausing that and watching it back, the last time I paused the TV, and maybe this is a sign of the fact you're more professional than me, is in the advert break for the Oral-B advert, to see the staggering number of red, yellow and green peppers the woman from the Oral-B advert has in her fridge. It's blown my mind for months, and especially when people were complaining about people stockpiling. I was very angry with quite how many peppers. And she also, because she obviously has lovely teeth, she picks up a pepper and eats it like an apple, and nobody does that. Barry, back to the football, which I guess we should focus on. Martial and Rashford are the first pair to score 20 each for United in the same season since Berbatov and Hernandez. Add Greenwood to that, 55 goals between them this season is four more than Liverpool's front three. It seems really weird that 6 months ago, Manchester United were a laughingstock. Were we wrong then, or are we wrong now, or is the truth, as it normally is, just sort of somewhere in the middle of these two?
Well, we weren't wrong then. Things change in football all the time. They were a laughing stock for a reason. The introduction of Bruno Fernandes has been just revelatory for United. He's made such a huge difference. We can but wonder what would have happened if they'd got him at the start of the season, as was their original intention, rather than in the January window. No, they weren't good earlier in the season. There was talk that Ollie, you know, people thought he should perhaps lose his job. They have improved a hell of a lot. They're much better to watch play. But I wouldn't go overboard yet. You know, don't forget that in this game, if you look at their lineup, the front five is, you think, wow, that's a really good front five. That's possibly a Premier League winning front five. But then if you look at the back, you've got Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Harry Maguire and David De Gea collaborating to make Junior Stanislas look like Georgie Best. And that's what the problem is going to be for them. They need to bolster their defence. They need a new goalkeeper if they're to mount anything even remotely resembling a challenge for the title. I'm not saying Aaron Wan-Bissaka is bad. He's been very good. He's had a brilliant first season for them. But you know, while Harry Maguire and David De Gea got all the blame for that junior Stanislas, what was a wonderful finish from him, I thought Wan-Bissaka could have done better as well. He overcommitted himself, dived in and sort of left Stanislas with that route towards goal via Harry and David.
John, can we talk about the renaissance of Nemanja Matic? I was pretty sure, you know, his days of kicking a football were numbered. And he seems to be quite an integral part of this team now.
Yeah, I mean, he was a signing that I don't think many Manchester United fans took to in the first place. They felt that he'd had his better days or best days at Chelsea. And that was borne out by quite a few of his performances. But within the structure of this Ole Gunnar Solskjaer team, such as it is, he's the guy on which a lot of emphasis is placed, you know, as that sort of, I suppose, pivot in midfield. He's doing a good job there. I would suggest, though, that the tests that Manchester United are facing at the moment are not particularly rigorous. This is not football at its apex. I would have thought that United were probably looking for something a bit better than that in the transfer market if they do move into it. There is talk of them buying Jadon Sancho, which to me seems ridiculous when they have so much attacking talent, when perhaps you'd look at the defence and think there's a few problems there. Matic is a player of real rich talents. There were points in his Chelsea career when he looked the real deal as that type of player and then would lose form dramatically. I think at the moment we're looking at one of his good points of form. But as I say, and as a theme I think I'll keep coming back to, I watch the football at the moment and I just don't know if we can think that it's real. That's my problem with it at the moment.
Do you think so? I don't know. I'm starting to look at teams who aren't necessarily playing for much and still putting in sort of reasonable performance. I thought this weekend's football actually was more interesting and there were more exciting games than have been so far, actually.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I wouldn't dismiss the entertainment value of the weekend. I just, let's have a look to see how football club executives react to the performances over this period. So for someone like Arsenal, for example, these 9 games or 10 games feel like a free shot. They feel like, you know, you can just do what you like. It feels like Manchester United are almost experimenting a little bit with the Fernandes and Pogba thing, because ultimately we don't know if there'll be a Champions League and we don't know. And it's different conditions. I think there's also this thing which is Anthony Martial has been really good. But is Anthony Martial one of those players that is better without a crowd than with a crowd? Are we seeing players who are really, really good in training looking good because there's not a crowd there? They always used to say that about Stuart Downing. And further back, they'd say that about a guy called Trevor Hebbard, who played for Oxford and Southampton.
Trevor Hebbard.
Are we seeing a load of Trevor Hebbards and Stuart Downings showing their best when actually under the real conditions of football they might not be that good a player?
I mean, it's worth pointing out then that Bournemouth definitely need a crowd, don't they? Because they're really struggling at the moment. A question to Jackie from someone called Jackie: why is Eddie Howe still the bookie's favourite to be the next England manager? Eddie Howe 7-2, followed by Arsene Wenger, Sean Dyche, Lampard, Gerrard and Brendan Rodgers. I think some of Wenger taking over from Gareth Southgate would be quite tremendous at one point. But on Eddie Howe, Jackie, I mean, how much is he responsible for what's happening at Bournemouth? Does it just feel like the end of a cycle, or do you think they can get out of it?
It's such a difficult one, isn't it? Because he's been there so long and he's achieved so much, and people talk about credit in the bank, which of course he has. And it depends whether you're one of his supporters and admirers or whether you're one of his detractors. And of course, some people change their mind with the wind because somebody have a great win one week and then they're terrible the next week. But he gets criticised by Bournemouth supporters for being too loyal to the old guard, some of whom came up from League One with him, the likes of Simon Francis, etc. And then Liverpool fans rub their hands saying, thank you so much for spending tens of millions of pounds on players who wouldn't get near our first team. So there's criticism whichever way you look. And of course, you know, you look at them now and second bottom from the table, it looks as though this good fortune's run out. In terms of him being the next England manager, I think people want him to go to a so-called bigger job, bigger club. He was linked with Arsenal at one point, Everton. It seemed to be just talk rather than it being something concrete, him ever being contacted. And you do wonder whether it's one of those cases of just having a different voice in the dressing room after so long, because a lot of those players will have heard, you know, similar tactics, similar team talks, obviously same training sessions, even though no doubt he's a young progressive coach and tries to change things. But again, if you look at the other side, you say, well, he's absolutely earned the right to try to bring them back up if they are to go down. So yeah, I mean, in terms of linking him with other jobs, he's not going to be linked with top jobs at the moment for very obvious reasons. Doesn't mean he's not a very, very good young coach. Doesn't mean he should necessarily be at Bournemouth forever. And I think it's one of those cases where he's happy in the area, his, you know, family, etc. It's one of the most settled jobs. And this is the first time, really, that he's been questioned in terms of whether they were to move him on.
I agree that he's young and progressive. I think he's a good manager. I wouldn't concur with the argument that he's in any way beaten Docket, but it does seem like the end of a cycle. And I heard Glenn Johnson talking on the radio a couple of days ago, and they were discussing Eddie Howe, and he was saying it's quite common knowledge in the game that he doesn't take kindly to players, any players, and particularly senior players, making suggestions or adding their two cents into tactical discussions or whatever. And this has resulted in him falling out with a couple of senior players at Bournemouth. Glenn mentioned a couple, that Jermaine Defoe is one that I can't remember who the other two were, but definitely mentioned Jermaine Defoe, that he's not open to suggestions from his players about how the game should be played. I don't know if that's common among managers or not. I mean, I wouldn't imagine Sir Alex Ferguson was too keen on players telling him how he should organise his team. But it was an interesting nugget of information from Johnson, one which I was completely unaware of. And he wasn't saying this in a disparaging way or anything. He was just saying it quite matter-of-factly. Has Glenn Johnson played for Eddie Howe?
I don't think so, no. But he knows Jermaine Defoe, that's for sure.
I mean, it's interesting. I would have had Eddie Howe as the most open. Like, I, if I was going to knock on a manager's door to say, why don't we play three at the back, Gaffer? You know, or can I play in holding midfield, please? I think Eddie Howe would be the door I'd like to knock on, you know. If I had a choice of that, or I don't know, Nigel Pearson, maybe Daniel Farker. I mean, he'd probably let you in.
I'm not sure about that, Max. The impression I've got, I've covered Bournemouth a little bit in the past. Obviously, Eddie Howe was there. He's a steely character, you know. One thing I would say is that he likes things done his own way, such that, and Jackie may know this, but the press conferences at Bournemouth are at 8 a.m. on a Friday morning, which is quite difficult to get to if you're from London. Speaking to a guy there a few years ago, he told me that Eddie Howe actually wanted to hold the presser at 6 a.m. so that it wouldn't disrupt his day. He's very focused, and I think part of that focus is that he's got a couple of coaches that he works closely with, but it's his way or the highway. That's always been my impression. And the one thing you would say about Bournemouth's demise is that it's guaranteed that Eddie Howe will take responsibility for that. He's that type of guy.
He's extremely intense, isn't he? I mean, I remember seeing an interview with him recently when things are going badly wrong. I mean, for example, they've lost 17 of the last 22 Premier League games. That's an extraordinary number of defeats in one season since that 1-0 win over Manchester United last year. But he is so intense that he said, well, I just work even harder, work even harder, work even harder. And sometimes you think maybe that's the last thing you need to do, is to just actually switch off, going for a run down the beach and maybe try to change your way slightly so you're less intense. But he's been there so long, you don't suspect he will change anytime soon.
Southampton 1, Manchester City 0. Barry, that finish from Che Adams is just brilliant.
Yeah, there was some cracking goals scored over the weekend, and that was definitely my favourite. And for a player who you would presume is short on confidence, who had played, I think, 30 times for Southampton without scoring, to do that makes it all the more commendable. It was a wonderful finish. I don't think Ederson was at fault. You know, he was where he was supposed to be. It was Zinchenko who gave the ball away. But Adams just, yeah, pounced, and it was brilliant. A lovely, lovely finish.
It was just so nice to see it curl. It like just to set it out. It was like a 7-iron, wasn't it? It was just beautiful, John.
Yeah, and pulled this stat from our friends at the Times here. That was the longest range Premier League goal of the season, 39.1 yards. But the second longest range Premier League goals came also against Ederson, which was my hero, Scott McTominay, 37.8 yards. That was the goal that he scored just before the lockdown in the Manchester derby. Are we saying that Ederson is vulnerable from 35 yards plus? but actually, I mean, joking aside, what I think is one of the things about Manchester City is that because the way that they play, and Pep Guardiola is not going to change this, that if things break down in midfield, they can leave the defence vulnerable and the goalkeeper. And I think that's probably where, I mean, Pep was fairly sanguine about, which is where the season has gone wrong, that type of mistake. Though I don't think we can count it all to goals from long distance.
Another stat on this game from Richard Jolly, the first of a couple from Richard in this pod. Manchester City had as many shots in losing 1-0 to Southampton as Leicester did in beating Southampton 9-0, 25 shots. But it's a great win for Southampton, Jackie. As I was saying, it was, you know, neither of these teams have a lot to play for. But it's quite extraordinary that Southampton don't have a lot to play for when you think about that 9-0 that evening with the horizontal rain, with pundits in warm studios criticising fans for leaving early when their team were 7-0 down or something. He's done a tremendous job there, hasn't he?
Well, it's extraordinary when you think back to that game, the 9-0 at home, remember, in October. That was their third defeat in four games at the time in all competitions. They went on to lose the next three as well. How many times would you see a manager lose their job straight away after a 9-0? I know there's a sending off, but still. And instead, the Southampton hierarchy stuck with him, even though we went on to lose the next three. And now that's bearing fruit. They're up to 13th in the table. And as you saw last night as we talk on Monday, Southampton were really resolute. And it was Stuart Armstrong that harassed Zinchenko into that mistake in the centre circle, just as Zinchenko made a mistake, same fixture last season, by the way, for a goal too. And so full credit to Southampton for the way they played and for having that belief, because they could have been there. They could have shut up shop. They could have just sort of psychologically, not quite folded, but been intimidated after seeing the way City dispatched Liverpool 4-0. And they didn't. They played their own game and they deserved that goal. And yes, they rode their luck, of course, but they defended brilliantly.
Why do we think they've lost so many games?
I think it's a combination of bad luck with injuries, and Nicolas Otamendi was out for a very long time. I would also put it down to just a lack of hunger that on their part that perhaps Liverpool certainly didn't have, because they had a point to prove following the narrow defeat in the league last season. And I would imagine that if you're playing for Pep Guardiola for a very long time, there probably comes a point where he's a bit too intense and you get sick of listening to him. And I'd say it's a factor of all those three things.
Is there a time when I'm too intense and you become sick of listening to me, Barry?
I occasionally become sick of listening to you. It's not down to any major intensity on your part, just the fact that I have to talk to you nearly every single day. But I'm sure you get sick of listening to me as well, as do many of our listeners.
No,
probably get sick of listening to both of us. So apologies.
Wolves 0, Arsenal 2. John, we talked about Manchester United sort of being a laughingstock 6 months ago and now being the best team in the country. Arsenal were a laughingstock 2 weeks ago and now the crisis is over.
Yeah. I mean, in those sort of opening couple of matches of Project Restart, which was, you know, obviously took a bit of getting used to, the thing that I held dear was Arsenal's utter hilarity to watch. You know, you had the David Luiz saga. But Arteta's done a good job there. Now, Arsenal fans are saying that's because Ozil and Guendouzi have been frozen out. you know, in Saka, they've got another young player to be very excited about. That was his first goal. It seems to be, if you sign a new contract, you'll score a goal that week. That seems to be the rule of things these days. I'm not sure club executives are too keen on that stat, but there you go. Quite an odd goal, really, wasn't it? I'm not sure that he really meant to do that. It went in. And actually, and here's a player I've criticised multiple times over the years, but I thought Granit Xhaka was very good in that game. And so you are seeing the seeds of Arteta turning over Arsenal. And I think perhaps by the time that Project Restart has stopped, Arsenal might be glad of that extra period in which to bed in. There's not really much pressure on them. It's giving Arteta time to work with the team. And I think he's producing good things from them, and they've got good young players coming in. And that's the type of thing that will excite the fans too.
Alexandre Lacazette, after the game, posted a tweet or Instagram post, I'm not sure which, but which gave every suggestion that he's off, that he'll be off at the end of the season. There was an air of a farewell message about it. There was a good stat, actually, on, I think it was a Match of the Day, I heard it. That was Arsenal's first away win against a team above them in the table since September 2015, which seems just remarkable.
Yeah. They're above Spurs now, Barry.
Well, that's no surprise, is it? Spurs are garbage.
Do you hear Jose Mourinho saying about how he has rather greater ambitions than being the best team in North London? But he was clearly upset by the fact that the Arsenal social media team tweeted their victory over Sheffield United, or highlights of it, after Spurs had lost against Sheffield United. And the Arsenal tweet had said, "This is how you beat them." Mourinho did not like that at all and has vowed to take it out.
Oh, man. I mean, that was after the last pub we did, Tottenham against Sheffield United. Tottenham was so bad against Sheffield United. It was one of those it was so demoralising to watch a team just had the ball the whole time, and then just Sheffield United just got it, scored, and then just went, well, you can have it for 20 minutes, and did it again and did it again. And then Jose questioned the mentality of his own players, which is not something I've heard him do before.
I don't think it's good for Jose Mourinho's mental health reading social media. It really can't be doing him any good at this point. I get the impression that that's what he does. And I don't think that's going to affect his output or that of his team at all. Arsenal's social media team, they like a laugh and a joke, don't they? There's been a few incidents over the years. And they seem to have wound him up. Well done.
Are you in favour of football official club accounts having banter, John?
Well, like anything, as long as it doesn't go too far. Is winding up Jose Mourinho okay? Actually, I'd say yeah.
Anyway, I suppose Everton tonight, you may well be listening to the pod after that game has happened. I hope but I don't know if I want... Is it better for Tottenham to not get into the Europa League now? Is it better for them to next season just have one game a week?
Yes.
All right. Well, I hope they lose. I can't hope they lose. All right, that'll do for part one. We'll round up the rest of the Premier League in part two. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Have a live online show bit of news for you. Tuesday, July the 21st, not an official Guardian event, but I will be doing a video call with Jonathan Wilson and Lars Sivertsen with a guest appearance from Barry Glendenning. It's a fiver, and you can buy a ticket and watch us all evening. And you can watch it wherever you are in the world. So come and have a nice time, wouldn't you say, Baz?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be good fun.
Right, Leicester 3, Palace 0. We should talk about Jamie Vardy. 100 goals in the Premier League is quite an extraordinary achievement for someone who didn't get to the Premier League till he was almost 28. 27 years, 232 days. I mean, you are 27 until you're 28, obviously, but... Of the 29 players to become Premier League centurions, only Ian Wright, he was older than Jamie Vardy, 28 years and 286 days. Of course, Ian Wright played football before it began in 1992. Palace's defending was very bad. John, I don't know what Gaita's doing for Leicester's first goal at all. And I'm a huge fan of Sacco's slowest Cruyff turn of a generation for their second.
Yeah, Jamie Vardy had missed an absolute pearler of a chance, and he couldn't believe his luck, could he, really, the way that it ended up with Harvey Barnes and then on a plate. And then, of course, for his second goal, he just speeds away, Jamie Vardy style, back in the groove. Crystal Palace, are we saying they're on the beach? Wilfred Zaha certainly looks as if he's on a beach, if he can get on an air bridge to somewhere. I have a personal recollection of Jamie Vardy, which is I actually saw his first Premier League goal, which was against Manchester United in that famous 5-3 game, you probably all recall, where...
Di Maria scored a lovely goal, didn't
Yeah, he? United suddenly looking like a Fergie team under Van Gaal, and then just fall apart. And Jamie Vardy scored the crucial goal in that game, just actually scoring a very typical Jamie Vardy goal. Now, after the game, he was very excitable, did all the mix zone TV. And I made a prediction that day that was that Jamie Vardy would never score another Premier League goal.
Brilliant.
And do you know what? He didn't score another Premier League goal for 6 months. For 6 months, I was incredibly smug. You know, I've called that one, and he scored another 100 since then. So that shows what I know.
What did you base it on, John?
Well, I suppose it's some sort of Premier League snobbery and the fact that he missed a lot of chances when he did play. You know, I had him down as some sort of Stuart Barlow figure. Do you remember Stuart Barlow?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Incredibly quick player, good player, but couldn't score. And, you know, there's been a few players like that. And that was how I saw Vardy, like the type of player where, you know, you watch Championship on Friday night and a team's got a player that works really, really hard, you know, gets himself in positions and misses and isn't able to make the jump. And, of course, Jamie Vardy had been a non-league player. Listen, I got that completely and utterly wrong. He has been one of the best players of the last decade. And yeah, of all my predictions, the friend of mine I was with that day, Tom Williams, reminds me of that rather too often. And I was totally wrong. Vardy has been brilliant, but he was coming out of a doldrum spell. And that's the thing, actually, he is a bit of a street player. Once he gets in the groove, just as he did against Palace, that, you know, that first one goes in, it's lucky. And then suddenly he's straight back into being Jamie Vardy again. Great player.
Perhaps perhaps the motivation that Jamie needed all came from you. Chelsea 3, Watford 0. This is a pretty regulation win for Chelsea, wasn't it, John? And they are in with a great shout at the top four.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose pressure had been put on by the United result earlier. And in Christian Pulisic, we're seeing one of the stars of Project Restart. He had a few injuries, didn't he, at the start of the season, and there were a few amongst American journalists, there were a fair few questions of when Frank Lampard was going to give him his chance. And actually, credit to Frank Lampard that he's managed that well. Okay, circumstances have perhaps dictated that a little bit. There's been a little bit longer to work him through into the team, but he looks so dangerous, and that. His running, his direct running, is a problem for anybody, in particular a Watford team who I've actually been quite shocked by how leaden they've been since they've come back after the break.
Etienne Capoue wasn't leaden when he charged in to Christian Pulisic. That was an amazing challenge, wasn't it?
I loved on Match of the Day, Ian Wright said it was like someone shot him out of a cannon. That really made me laugh.
Yeah, there can't be a more blatant penalty than that all season, can there? I really do worry for Watford. Deulofeu is missing, I suppose, but the new Nigel bounce really hasn't sustained itself because I suppose they had that big break and it's just not happening for them.
Does Christian Pulisic look American because I know he's American? And there aren't that many Americans playing in the Premier League. Or does he really look American?
No, he really looks American. I was watching the film. Have you ever seen this film, All the Right Moves, starring Tom Cruise? Which is a classic sort of high school film where they're playing, you know, football, NFL football. And it's the eyes, I think, with Christian Pulisic. Only Americans have eyes like that. They're just I don't know, just that he has that sort of high school look about him, doesn't he?
You can imagine his attractive blonde mom dropping him off at Stamford Bridge before the game in the Range Rover.
Yeah, him heading to Arnold's on Happy Days or something like that, you know.
So, hello to our American listeners who are just head in hands at these terrible cliches that are coming out. But Jackie, he is a tremendous footballer, and obviously lots of comparisons with Eden Hazard. Are they fair? Are they correct?
Well, he was a little bit embarrassed about it, wasn't he? But it's always funny when you sort of ask a player about things like that, and then they go all embarrassed. But I mean, he's a highly talented player, and it's one of those where you trust Frank Lampard really to know when to bring him in. But he's still only 21, Pulisic. He's scored 7 goals in 15 Premier League starts and 5 substitute appearances. So he's doing pretty well for himself.
It is because of the players that are coming in. You talk about players that feel like they've been around forever. Willian and Barkley, who both scored, do feel like and have been around for quite a long time. I don't know what to make of either of those players, Barry. I should have a view on both of them by now, but I'm just not sure. And I don't know where either of them fit when Chelsea bring in all these extra forward players.
Well, Willian's out of contract, isn't he? So he may leave, as far as I know. I actually did a little doodle, which I'm going to show you now in my window.
Oh, yes.
Just all the attacking players Chelsea have or will have for next season. So, like, up front, you've Werner, Tammy Abraham, Olivier Giroud. On the left, Pulisic, Callum Hudson-Odoi. On the right, Hakim Ziyech, Willian, if he stays. And then in midfield, you've got Ross Barkley, Mason Mount, Mateo Kovacic, Billy Gilmore, N'Golo Kante, Jorginho, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. That's a lot of players, and they look very light in defence, or they're not very good at defending, but they should be quite excellent going forward, particularly if they are allowed to field more than 15 players. And if any manager is able to lobby the Premier League to get permission to play, you know, use 15 or 16 players, it will be the genius that is Frank Lampard.
Liverpool 2, Villa 0. 19-year-old Curtis Jones getting Liverpool's second the day after he signed a new contract. Richard says the UK number one single on the day Curtis Jones was born, the 30th of January 2001, was Rollin' by Limp Bizkit.
Max.
Yes, yes.
Mason Greenwood, you know what was number one when he was born in October 2001, just to make you feel quite old?
Go on, tell me.
Kylie, Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Oh, really? Well, if Mama Jones had held on for one more week, Curtis Jones would have been born while Atomic Kitten's Hole Again was number one in the charts. Paul Senior from...
This sounds like a very opportune time for me to point out, just apropos nothing, that Liz McLarnon from Atomic Kitten once said on live radio that I had the sexiest voice she has ever heard.
Well, I can't deny it. It is true. Paul Senior from the Anfield Rap saying just lapped Everton there with the number of points that Liverpool have. And they're on the course for winning every home game, aren't they? Richard Jolly's next stat of the pod. The only team to have finished a top flight season with a 100% home record was Sunderland in 1891-92. 78 of their 93 goals were scored by players called John or Jimmy. This was a pretty regulation win, wasn't it? I mean, Villa sort of dug in there and held out for a while, John, but it just sort of felt like this was going to be a Liverpool 2-0 win.
Yeah, yeah. It took a while to arrive, but it was going to happen. Mané's goal. And yeah, I suppose the story is Curtis Jones. It must be difficult for a player like that. I know he said, actually, over this season that he's disappointed not to have played more, which is quite some claim when you consider that he thinks he should have played more for the World, European and Premier League champions. So there's a young man full of confidence. But the way he took that goal, just as he did in the Merseyside Derby in the FA Cup, shows there's a player of real talent there. I actually have to credit Liverpool for coming back from that performance after the City game. You could have forgiven them for just really resting on their laurels, but obviously that's not going to happen with Jurgen Klopp. We saw how angry he was after the Etihad, and they responded. They're not playing like Liverpool of, well, it's not even of old, of Liverpool of February, but they are outstanding champions, and I actually, like most of those teams, like all those teams in the bottom four, actually, I really worry for Villa because they just don't have anything up front, do they?
Question from Brian here, and I've sort of joked about teams wearing green kits and being sort of facetious about it, but he says, like, I'm trying to watch Liverpool versus Aston Villa, and it's impossible for colourblind people. You cannot tell the teams apart. The Premier League have protocols for colourblind strips, but it looks like both clubs and the league don't care. Can you raise this issue? I don't expect any of you to...
I am colourblind, Max.
Are you colourblind?
Yes, yeah.
And?
I can see where he's coming from with that one, yeah. And maybe not really bad. There are games where you watch them and you think, I can't tell who's playing there.
That happened in a game last week as well. I can't remember which one it was, but both teams were playing in sort of variations of yellowy, orangey. It must have been Wolves and someone else. But anyway, but I did see colourblind people complaining on social media about how it was impossible for them to distinguish between the teams.
It'd be surprising if that's been allowed to happen, unless it's happened on a match day when it's not been considered, as opposed to in advance. But it's always worth highlighting these things.
Totally. Newcastle 2, West Ham 2. Newcastle unbeaten in 5. My final Richard Jolly tweet. Newcastle have scored twice as many league goals in June and July as they score between January and May. This is amazing. The thing I liked most about this game was the look on David Moyes' face after West Ham allowed Newcastle to equalise a minute after Thomas Suchek had put them 2-1 up. He looked, I mean, incandescent with rage, Barry.
Yeah, and he'd every right to be. It was a sloppy goal to give away. I would argue that the sight of Fornells appealing for offside for that goal, having kept the entire Newcastle team onside by about 10 yards, was funnier.
He's by the corner flag, yeah, virtually.
And he just turned to the linesman with his arms out going, you know, what are you doing? Why isn't the flag up? Completely oblivious to the fact that he'd been in a ridiculous position keeping everyone onside by quite some margin.
I sympathise with attacking players when they're defending. It's a bit like, you know, Ollie McBurnie not really tracking Tarkowski. It's just much harder to sprint when you're defending. And if you're an attacking player, you're just not thinking about it. I had this discussion on the radio with Ray Houghton yesterday and he thought I was completely ridiculous. So this may be the difference between elite sport and amateur sport. But I think any attacking player, it is so instinctive and natural to make a run, an attacking run. But if you're Pablo Fornals, you're just trotting about, thinking, I don't really want to be back here. It's not what I'm here for. And so I don't blame him.
I just can't believe you were on the radio with Ray Houghton yesterday and now you're rubbing my nose in it. Thanks,
man. Sorry about that, Barry. You'll be okay. The Daily Mirror ran the headline, Can David Moyes turn West Ham into England's RB Leipzig? John Bruin, can he do that?
Can he do that? Is it Ralph Rangnick? Is the architect of that particular? I mean, compare him to David Moyes. I didn't read the article in question, so I can't really know where they pulled that comparison from.
Well, to put it in context, while he was out of work, David Moyes spent time at RB Leipzig just looking at how they do things, and they're obviously famous for. They're a famously unpopular team in Germany, so you could argue West Ham have already ticked that box. RB Leipzig moved stadium in recent years, so West Ham have ticked that box. But what Moyes was mooting is that he wants to adopt the RB Leipzig policy of buying young players from other clubs and then selling them on at a huge profit. After, you know, 2 or 3 years. So maybe what RB Leipzig do is buy loads of 16, 17-year-olds from other clubs. And they also have their own RB Leipzig franchises around the world, which, you know, they take players from them. And then sort of bed them in and then sell them a few years later for enormous profit. Now, it's worth noting that no player produced by the RB Leipzig Academy has ever played in their first team that I'm aware of anyway. That was certainly true up to a year ago. I couldn't imagine the West Ham hierarchy going for that. It's a good idea if you can make it work. I'm not sure David Moyes, who strikes me as being an incredibly conservative manager, would be the man to do the job. But it's certainly working for RB Leipzig. I can't see Messrs. Gold and Sullivan or Miss Karen Brady going for this idea at all. I think the first sign of it going wrong, they'd panic and
get Sam Allardyce in.
Yeah, get big Sam in.
What Barry's read out there sounds completely the opposite of West Ham's transfer policy and structure of the club over the last 100 years. I mean, it's when you think of West Ham, you think of them buying old and injured players. That's been their transfer policy for many years, and them selling them for nothing. You think of players like Freddie Ljungberg turning up at West Ham when he was completely great player, but not for West Ham. Kieran Dyer, players like that have just been through the club. I mean, it sounds like David Moyes has got a good idea there. Absolutely. And you'd be supportive of it, but as Barry says, I can't see it happening at that club.
It would involve investing in a philosophy rather than trying to buy instant success. And trying and failing to buy instant success is what West Ham are all about. You know, so this would be a complete U-turn, and it's not going to happen. But it's a good idea.
Can I point everyone in the direction of Lucas Fabianski's Twitter account?
Oh, yes.
He's got a sort of Adama Traore approach to no-nonsense, honest Twitter posts after games. His tweet after the draw with Newcastle was, "It's all square at St James's Park. We move on to the next game." And he did a better one, which somebody showed me this morning, which was on February the 9th. He tweeted, "Match day, thumbs up, hashtag COYI, come on you Irons." And then he quoted the tweet and wrote, "Edit, due to bad weather conditions, match is postponed." which, that's a huge fan of players delivering news like that. Norwich 0, Brighton 1. There were four players sitting on the pitch after the final whistle, Todd Cantwell among them, staying on the pitch for nearly 10 minutes after everyone else had left in that we've been relegated feeling, even though they haven't been relegated yet. But it's pretty much done for them, isn't it? Dan says, "Will Norwich score another Premier League goal before the season is out? Which Norwich players will get sold? And will they bounce back from the Championship next season?" Jackie Oakley.
Yeah, all those questions. I mean, it's not so often that you see a team looking as though they really have given up at this stage of the season with 33 games played, 5 to go. But that looks to be the case. When I've seen them play, there's been some wonderful approach play, so many chances created on occasion, but just not finishing them off. And so even the manager's quotes, players, McLean, going, until it's mathematically possible. When you've got players talking about anything being mathematically possible, it means it's psychologically impossible because they're already beaten. I'm going to Watford, Norwich tomorrow night, Tuesday night, and Watford will see that as a glorious opportunity to try and pull away from the relegation zone because they're just 1 point clear at the moment.
Burnley 1, Sheffield United 1. Does anyone have 30 seconds worth of joyous analysis on this football match?
I do, actually. John Egan scored his first goal of the season for Sheffield United. What a lot of our listeners may not know is John Egan's father, John Senior, was a very famous Gaelic football player who won 6 All-Ireland finals with Kerry. And John Junior was a very good Gaelic footballer himself and wanted to make a career in Gaelic football in so much as he can. It's an amateur sport. His father was a guard. That was his proper job, or a policeman. But John Senior, who passed away 8 years ago, persuaded him to try his luck with professional football over in the UK. He was with Sunderland for a few years. Didn't really work out for him there. But somebody on Twitter, somebody very clever, got the footage of his goal yesterday, which was a lovely half volley at the far post, and put a commentary of his father scoring a goal for Kerry over it with this famous Irish commentator called Micheál O'Meara-Herty. And anyone who is familiar with the work of the Kerry football team or with Micheál O'Meara-Herty will have had their spines tingling listening to that commentary as John Junior scored a wonderful goal, timed perfectly to commentary of one of his late dad's goal. It was a lovely touch, and he saw it on Twitter, and he was quite clearly very touched by it as well.
That's really nice. And we'll end part two with that, and we'll round up the Football League in part three. Hello, Football Weekly fans. Max here. I'm here to tell you about a new weekly podcast series from The Guardian called Forgotten Stories of Football. Some of the best stories from over 100 years of football history that you have probably never heard, written by some of the world's leading sports journalists, many of whom you will know. Episodes still to come include the France football captain who murdered for Hitler, Dundee United's glory years under Jim McLean, and how the white ball was originally dismissed as an unwanted fad. Listen now to Forgotten Stories of Football from The Guardian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to part three of The Guardian Football Weekly. Tuesday's pod will be a Euro pod. Real Madrid have a 4-point lead over Barcelona. Juve 7 points clear in Italy. Bayern winning the German Cup final. Sid, Nicky and Archie on to chat about all of that tomorrow. Meanwhile, in the Championship, Leeds 1 point ahead of West Brom. Leeds won 3-1 at Blackburn. West Brom beat Hull 4-2. Kamil Grzycki refusing to celebrate in front of the no fans of his former club. I enjoyed seeing that. Brentford have 5 straight wins. They're in third. Side Benrahma scored a hat-trick. He's a tremendous footballer. Forest letting an injury time equaliser against Derby in the Cluffy Cup. Did anybody see this tweet from the Nottinghamshire branch of the British Transport Police? Officers attended a report of persons in the canal opposite Nottingham Station. A Forest fan had jumped in to celebrate a win over local rivals, unaware of the late equaliser. Hashtag wounded. That is a wonderful image. It's just to drag someone, just to drag him out and say.
He probably did it in the 6th minute of stoppage time, thinking, oh, surely that's going to be it now. And then Chris Martin equalised in the 97th minute. Oh.
But the thing is, I watched most of that game, and I was also, I had to go out to do something just before the final whistle, and I also missed it, and wasn't aware that Derby had equalised until I saw someone flagging up that tweet. So I too, I didn't jump in a river, but I was oblivious to the late equaliser.
I tweeted about this yesterday, and someone got in touch to say, there's an apocryphal story from Evertonians. I don't know if it's true that in 77, I think the FA Cup semi-final, they scored, I think, against Liverpool in the last minute.
Brian Hamilton.
It was disallowed by Clive Thomas. There were a load of Evertonians in the Navy who were out in the West Indies, and the line went down after the goal had gone in. So they thought they got through to the FA Cup final for 5 days. anyway, Fulham are 5th, Cardiff are 6th. Cardiff beat Bristol City, who sacked Lee Johnson. He was the longest-serving manager in the Championship. Luton, they've had a terrible run of results since restart. Luton lost 5-0 at home to Reading, their bottom. Tom says, can we get some appreciation for Reading's Yaku Maiti scoring 4 goals, being subbed, and then eating pizza in the stands as he watched the last 20 minutes? A great addition to football with no crowds. Very tight for the last relegation spot. Middlesbrough, Hull, Huddersfield, Stoke and Charlton all still in danger. We should talk about Wigan. We touched on it last week, Barry. Obviously, they got hammered by Brentford at the weekend. But it's such a depressing situation, isn't it?
Well, it's just an extraordinary story. It's one of the strangest things to happen in English football for a long time, in my opinion. And the more we hear about the story, and there's plenty more to come, I suspect, the weirder it gets. I mean, up until quite recently, Wigan were a very well... And I mean very recently, I mean a month ago, Wigan were a very well-run club with loads of money, with lots of... They own their own ground. They own their own training ground. They've got lots of saleable assets in their first team who are worth quite a lot of money. And then last Friday, their players didn't get paid. The players have been told they might get 20% of the wages they're due. They were also supposed to get 3 months of deferred wages, which they a pay cut they volunteered to take at the start of lockdown to help the club get through a difficult spell. Yeah, so I don't think there's any danger of Wigan going out of business because they've got a lot of assets, but it's a very weird story that's going to run and run.
League One playoff second legs are tonight, Monday. Oxford and Portsmouth drew 1-1. Wickham hammered Fleetwood 4-1 away. Fleetwood had two men sent off as well. It was quite an extraordinary game of football. Ollie Ezard got in touch with us, and maybe I'll share screen with you to say, has he noticed that how much more Joey Barton is looking like Joe Pasquale these days? let me just show you. I'll share this screen, and you can tell from the reaction if you think this is correct or not.
He really, really, really loves Morrissey, doesn't he? That's the look he's gone for. Unfortunately, it's not worked out for him, has it?
Not in these playoffs. You never know, though. You never know. Bolton have named Barrow boss Ian Everett as their new head coach. Obviously got Barrow into League Two, and he'll be facing them because Bolton went down, didn't they? And in other League Two manager news, best name in football, Mickey Mellon, is leaving victims of PPG Tranmere Rovers to become Dundee United manager. Now time for the culture section of the pod. Cavord says, is there anything Barry hates more than theatre?
That's an unfair question, and it's a reference to a tweet I put out the other day in which I was appealing for, you know, help for the arts, but I also pointed out that it was more or less a plea, please save plays and the theatre, just don't make me go to one. Every play I've ever been to has been awful. I guess I'm just unlucky. But yeah, there are many things I would rather do than have to go and watch a play.
Okay, while we're on culture, Jeremy says, can you ask John Bruin why he's such a massive music snob and to explain why he thinks Ed Sheeran is so talentless?
Oh, okay. Well, how long have you got?
not very long.
Well, okay, Ed Sheeran, I suppose there's two words, Galway girl. Ed did an interview with The Guardian in which he explained his thinking behind that, and he decided that he wanted to go down. He realised that the cause were big in the 90s, and he wanted to revive that, and he thought there was money in it. I don't know, Ed Sheeran, well, it's not for me. It's obviously for loads of other people, and I'm right, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I reckon I've heard one of his songs and quite enjoyed it. But then I really don't think I'd like you. I wouldn't like you to go through my Spotify, John. I think we might.
I really would like to go through your Spotify, Max.
I've also Ed Sheeran. He's a bit like Bob Dylan in Safari, just buskers who got lucky.
Have you listened to Dylan's latest, Barry?
God, no.
It's good. I'm not a big Dylan fan, but I quite like it. So there you go.
Well, I can't criticise it because I haven't heard it, but I'm willing to bet it's garbage.
It'd be interesting to see when Six Music approach us, but won't it? This is from Atman and Van. Do any of Jackie's friends sing to the tune of Smooth Criminal? Jackie, are you Oatley? Jackie, are you Oatley? Are you Oatley, Jackie, to her and think they're hilarious?
I can honestly say in my 21 and a half years on this planet, that's never happened. But there's still time in my other 50 or 60 years to go.
And we move away from culture. We finish with a question from Kevin McNaughton, Cardiff legend, former Scotland international, who asks a question in capital letters. What part of the human face is your favourite?
My face or faces in general?
He doesn't give any more specifics, does Kev?
I like a nice nose.
I'm going eyes. John?
The beard.
Jackie?
Eyes, definitely, every time.
Well, there we are. I hope that answers your question, Kev. Please ask us another on the next pod. John, thanks for your time.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Baz.
You're welcome.
Sid Lowe, Nicky Maddini, Archie Wintup will join me and Barry tomorrow for a Euro roundup.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.